we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show, Western Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, May the 26th, 2017. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by my co-host, Jen Dobell.
Hi.
The theme of today's show is doing vegan outreach in the food industry to provide more plant-based and healthy options. For our first interview today, we have Senior Director of Food Policy of the Humane Society of the United States, Christy Middleton, on the show. Christy works to get more plant-based options offered in food establishments across North America. And as I mentioned last week, she will actually be here next week in Vancouver to co-host the Forward Food Summit. It's a day-long event whose purpose it is to educate food service professionals on why and how to offer healthier and plant-based menu options in their cafeterias and dining halls at places such as universities and hospitals, where you could say it's the most needed. Christy will be telling us about this free culinary training that she helps to provide food service professionals and the successes she is seeing at these institutions. And for our feature interview, along the same vein, we have 15-year-old activist Lila Copeland on the show, who has been an animal activist since she was 4 months old. Lila founded the Earth Peace Foundation to make the world a better place, and for the last 2 years, she has been working hard to convince the Los Angeles School District, which serves 600,000 children, to start offering plant-based entrees and plant milks in their schools. Less than 3 weeks ago, she was successful in this first part of the campaign, when the LAUSD voted unanimously in favor of launching a plant-based pilot program in the upcoming school year. Lila is on the show today and will speak with us about her hard work to make this happen. That interview is coming up in about 35 minutes, so please do stay tuned. And I just wanted to give a quick mention about Veg Expo that's happening this Sunday. We'll be speaking more about it later in the show, but if you want to win a coupon code, we have two of these codes for 2-for-1 tickets. That is basically you get two tickets for the price of one. We have two sets of these to give away. Just go on our Facebook, Animal Voices Vancouver, enter your name there, and we'll be doing the draw at the end of the show. Now, Jen, you wanted to give us an update on Bill S-203 and the work you're doing to hopefully get that passed. Can you tell us more about that,
right,
please?
So we recently had a success in Vancouver where the Park Board has banned the importation of new cetaceans into Vancouver for display. And now going beyond this, we're working on something bigger for all of Canada. Bill S-203, this enactment amends the criminal code to create offenses respecting cetaceans in captivity. It also amends the Fisheries Act to prohibit the taking of a cetacean into captivity and the Wild Animal and Plant Protection and Regulation of International and Interprovincial Trade Act to prohibit the import of cetacean into Canada and the export of a cetacean from Canada. So those who don't know, a cetacean is a whale, dolphin, or porpoise. And if passed, Bill S-203 would criminalize the keeping of whales and dolphins in captivity in Canada. Bill S-203 is currently being considered by a Senate committee. The bill provides an exception for animals needing rehabilitation or long-term care, but the bill mainly affects marine land where 45-plus cetaceans, many beluga whales, are held. Seaside sanctuary projects like the Whale Sanctuary Project could still go ahead under Bill S-203 and is only for rescued and retired animals. So S-203 is opposed by marine land and the Vancouver Aquarium, of course. We're not surprised by that. These companies profit from animals in captivity. Fisheries and Oceans Canada has not taken a position yet. So the plan is to vote on it, excuse me, before Parliament adjourns for the summer. And if it doesn't get passed by the recess, they have to start all over again. So what you can do, everybody, is go to whales.advocate.ca and sign that petition, please.
And we'll make a post to that on our Facebook page as well. I'll do that during the show today.
Right.
So, Jen, I want to know, how is this, so the Vancouver Aquarium no longer will have cetaceans in captivity on display. How will this bill change, or how does it supersede what is going to be happening at Vancouver Aquarium? Is there more to it?
Okay, so just to correct one thing that you said, though, the three cetaceans they currently have are grandfathered in.
Right,
further but cetaceans. Yes, for future, they will not be able to capture from the wild and to put them on display. They are still allowed to rescue from the wild, and they can send them to other sanctuaries. They can send them to other facilities for rehabilitation and hopefully are considered for release. And the Vancouver Aquarium can specifically contribute to the fundraiser for $20 million to build the Whale Sanctuary Project. You can check that out at whalesanctuaryproject.org. The Vancouver Aquarium has slated $100 million for their Arctic exhibit that they were going to be expanding, with the idea that they would be bringing back their belugas they have on loan at various locations in the United States. And now, because of this park board ban, they're unable to bring those animals back. So it would be logical to donate some of that money to the Whale Sanctuary Project and have a more humane environment for these animals.
So because this Senate election, this vote is coming up really soon, and what can citizens do to become more aware? Are you working to try to just educate the public? Of course, we are here on the radio, too.
Well, you know, I hate to say this, but I really feel that the main thing that I would like the public to understand is that it's not worth it to have animals in captivity for the excuses that we're using right now. And that would be education and research. And I really hate to say that when I do engage with a lot of the public who are supporters of these facilities, these are the excuses that they're giving. So beyond Bill S-203, we need people to stop buying tickets. Right. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a need to set this bill up.
What I mean is people need to become educated on the reasons why not to buy tickets.
Yes, people need to be more compassionate and learn to put themselves in the animal's place. Think of these cetaceans. How far do you think they swim in the wild? And then how far are they swimming in these tanks? And also scratch beneath the surface. When a facility that profits from animals in captivity is telling you that they're rescued and that they're not releasable, question that. Question that to the people that are making the money off of these ticket sales.
Well, thank you for that update on Bill S-203. And of course, we'll keep you updated throughout the summer as this progresses.
And one more thing, please watch VancouverAquariumUncovered.com. You can find that online for free.
It's a free film, exactly. Thank you.
Hey there, Co-op Radio listeners. Do you like food? Of course you do. Would you like to learn more about food? Why not? Well, then tune in every Monday at 8 p.m. for Food Line Radio, where we talk all about food. Sourcing food, buying food, the politics of food. Hey, even cooking food. Food, glorious food. Listen every Monday at 8 p.m. for Food Line Radio on Vancouver's Co-op Radio 100.5 FM.
And now we have some events. So this weekend, Sunday, May the 28th, is Veg Expo from 10 to 6 at the Vancouver Convention Centre West, 1055 Canada Place, featuring over 200 local and international exhibitors promoting their edible and lifestyle products. In 2016, we broke the record for the highest attended one-day show at Canada Place, reaching over 11,000 enthusiasts. And as if you were listening to our show earlier, Allison mentioned that we're doing a draw at the end of the show. So you can go to Animal Voices Vancouver on Facebook to learn how to enter that draw for 2-for-1 tickets. Veg Expo is a day of celebration where we introduce new, innovative, inspiring products and services that you can implement into your lifestyle and to meet others and that share your passion. This is a day for the entire family to enjoy with an interactive kid zone, cooking demonstrations with local celebrated chefs, information on locally sourced foods and products, explore innovative, sustainable transportation options on the market, take a break in our vegetation lounge, enjoy free samples and giveaways, plus get inspired by a natural vegan bodybuilder showcase. There are many speakers lined up for the main stage, including David Carter, also known as the 300-pound vegan. I'm really looking forward to seeing him. He's an American football football player and a vegan activist.
I'm looking forward to seeing him.
Pretty good looking guy too.
He's compassionate. That's what I like the best.
It's awesome that he's also an advocate. And I'll be there. I'll be volunteering at the Mercy for Animals table. So come on by and say hi.
And there'll be there'll be other animal liberation organizations there too.
Tons of them. Yeah. Yes, the Fur Bearers will be there. Liberation BC, I think, is going to be there. So you're going to meet some heroes that are spending their lives to fight for animals. A Mercy for Animals promotes a humane vegan lifestyle by sending undercover investigators into slaughterhouses and factory farms to show the public the truth behind where their food comes from. And their 2014 investigation of the Chilliwack Dairy Farm recently resulted in $300,000 in animal cruelty charges and 3 employees serving jail time. That just happened last week. So the head of Mercy for Animals is actually going to be speaking at the event as well, which I think will be really inspiring. And my goal this year is to convert all the vegetarians into vegans by educating them at
Veg Expo. Mm-hmm. Good for you.
Just knock those guys right off the fence.
Yeah, I volunteered. I've done tabling at the Veg Expo before, and I really enjoy speaking to people. Lots of people come by and say, I'm a vegetarian. So
yeah,
there's definitely conversations to be had there.
Who were you tabling with when you were there?
Liberation BC. I've done that for a couple years.
Okay. Yeah. So tickets range between $5 for kids, $13 for seniors, $15 for adults, and there's even family package deals. So check out vegexpo.ca for more information and, of course, free samples.
And go on our Facebook page to get the 2-for-1 tickets.
Right. So on June 9th, join us for a film entitled Call to Rescue, Redefining Our Barnyard Story, hosted by Vancouver Chicken Save and Animal Voices Radio. The film will be shown from 5:30 to 8 p.m. at SFU Downtown Vancouver. More info available on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. This is a heartwarming film about rescued farm animals who are the most exploited animals on Earth and the sanctuaries where they live out the rest of their lives. And I checked out a little clip of the film, and it really does look like a sweet little tear-jerking film. You're going to be there, Allison?
Absolutely. We're co-hosting it, so I hope you can show up too.
I hope so too.
I'm saving myself to watch it, I think, maybe till that day, because I have seen a bit of what it's about, different rescue stories of sanctuaries, and it's always lovely to watch. So bring a friend.
We love rescue stories. And on Sunday, June the 4th, from 5 to 7 at the Victoria Legislature, join activists for National Animal Rights Day, also known as NARD. More information can be found on the Facebook page, NARD 2017. This is an event that takes place in numerous cities around the world and was established by the nonprofit Our Planet, Theirs Too in 2011. I encourage you to look up the videos on the event page. NARD.org. The first time I watched an event, I was in tears. Activists were standing row upon row in public spaces with tears in their eyes, gently holding deceased animals that they'd collected and frozen for the event. It was really moving. Soft music played in the background and somebody was giving a speech about how we use animals. And that's it for our events.
Yeah, if you have an animal-friendly related event that you would like to have announced on the show, please post it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, or you can send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Now, for our first interview today, we have Christy Middleton on the show. She is the Senior Director of Food Policy for the Humane Society of the United States, where she directs the organization's efforts to increase plant-based eating. She works with institutions across North America to educate food service professionals in gaining insights into the latest trends in both implementing and marketing plant-based menus. The work is done in establishments such as universities and hospitals. Christy is also the author of a recently published book called Meatless: Transform the Way You Eat and Live One Meal at a Time. She is here today to talk about her work in getting healthy vegan food in dining halls, cafeterias, and hospitals, which serves thousands of people in need of better options. Hello, Christy, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Good afternoon. Thanks so much for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you for coming on the show today to speak with us about your work in institutions across North America on offering healthier and plant-based food choices. In fact, you'll be here in Vancouver next week to take part in the Forward Food Summit that we are having at the University of British Columbia, and I'm really looking forward to attending that. Veganism itself has been known to be one of the top food trends for the past several years. Awareness and interest is growing. Can you talk about these food trends and how institutions should be meeting demands for healthy plant-based foods?
Absolutely. Well, I'm really looking forward to being there in Vancouver next week. We have a really incredible lineup for the event, but we offer these events because we want institutions to recognize that there is this growing demand for more plant-based options, and that if they're not meeting that demand, they're potentially missing out on opportunities to appeal to this growing customer base, as well as to potentially save some money. And so in terms of where the demand is coming from, while we know that there is this rise of flexitarians, that there are about 3% or so of at least Americans who are vegetarian or self-reporting to be vegetarian, but the number of people who are eating less meat is growing by leaps and bounds. So flexitarians, people who are eating meat some of the time but eating mostly vegetarian, about 3 out of 5 Americans are reporting to be flexitarian, and increasingly the trade publications are recognizing that growth of the sector. So we follow the food service trade publications, and for the past several years, Food Service Director, for example, said that the top food trend for 2015, that the number one trend was that vegan went mainstream. In 2016, NPR said that vegetables were more likely to take up more of our plates and that vegetables were the hero of the year. And this year, Forbes magazine said that the number one food trend would be vegetarian comfort food. So I don't know about you, but I feel like when something is a trend year after year, it's really no longer a trend. It's actually here to stay. And in fact, it's part of our culture. And so what we help institutions with is realizing that this is a business opportunity, helping them better understand the landscape and how to appeal to those customers, and then offer tips and tricks as well as hands-on training to help them with meeting that growing demand.
That sounds so great. Jen here has a question for you.
Hi. Can you talk to us about the Forward Food Program and the services that you and your chef team provide in educating food service professionals on how and why to offer plant-based options? And do you initiate the conversation with the food service administrators? Do they come to you first, or is it a combination of both?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Jen. Thanks for asking. And the Forward Food Program is a program that the Humane Society of the United States started after we started really finding that there was this increasing demand. So I'll just talk a little bit about our approach on farm animal protection. We work to help farm animals and help end their abuse and suffering through 3 different approaches. One, we work on public policy, helping to create laws to phase out some of the worst practices, like moving away from gestation crates and battery cages, and then also prevent bad laws from popping up, which, you know, happens from time to time. And we also work on corporate policy, so helping major food companies with moving away from gestation crates, veal crates, battery cages in their supply chains. And I think most of your listeners may be familiar with those practices, but essentially those devices are used to immobilize animals for pretty much the duration of their existence in ways that I think most people would be horrified if they knew that's how animals are institutionally raised in the United States and Canada and in most developed nations. So unfortunately, that's the way that the majority of animals are raised. And even though many companies and institutions have created policies to move away from those practices, there's really no way for us to humanely raise animals and to be able to get to this more humane world that I think most of us believe we should be getting to without reducing the amount of meat and other animal products that we're all consuming. And so we created Forward Food to help raise awareness of this, as well as to give chefs and institutions the tools that they need to be able to reach those goals. So, for example, we offer hands-on culinary instruction, and we do this for free. And the reason that we offer the hands-on culinary instruction is because we had been hearing from so many institutions that they knew that there was a demand, that their customers were asking for more plant-based options, but they weren't really sure what to do, or they weren't serving things that were really delicious. And so we brought on a chef to our team, as well as a former food service professional. We also have 2 dietitians on the team who have food service experience to help with better understanding the obstacles and the opportunities in that sector, and then to really give these institutions the tools that they need to bring these programs to their hospitals, to their corporate cafeterias, to their university dining halls. And then to answer the second part of your question, we initially started initiating conversation when we began the program. We were really knocking on doors, and we still do some of that. But I would say more and more we're getting requests from institutions that have heard about this program, and they recognize that they need to be adding more plant-based options to their menus, and they've reached out to us for help. And to date, we've now trained over 3,000 chefs on how to cook delicious plant-based food that will appeal to all of their guests. So it's something that we're all very excited about.
Well, I know you were just at the University of California, Berkeley last week doing culinary training with the chefs and cooks there. I was so delighted to watch a video that you posted online showing all the healthy plant-based creations that the cooks were making to be eaten. Can you tell us about what this training was like or is like when you go into schools and cafeterias to do this type of training? What were some of the foods that the cooks were making last week that can now be offered in the cafeterias there?
Oh, I'm so glad you were able to see that. So, you know, these trainings are so much fun. And one of the things that I really love the most about it is that oftentimes people come in with preconceived notions. They have an idea of what vegan food is, and they're not very excited about it. And they, by lunchtime, are taking pictures of their food. They are saying things like, I could eat this food some of the time. And then by the end of day two, they're like, you know what? I could probably be vegan if I could eat like this. And I tell them, well, actually, you can. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of fun. We share with them a delicious packet of recipes, and each team works on a recipe. And then at lunchtime, they present. They talk about what they did, what the special ingredients were, if any, that they put in them, how they may have personalized those foods. And they're making things like cauliflower fried rice, except there's no rice in it. It's actually made with cauliflower, like roasted root vegetables, like spicy potato curry. One of my favorites is eggplant parmesan. We do breakfast, lunch, dinner, small plates. And one of my favorites is, of course, dessert, all totally vegan. And we'll make all of your guests hungry if I keep talking about the food. But it's a real incredible event. And every single time I'm blown away by the response of the attendees who are really excited about the food that they've just prepared.
Yeah, I was just really excited watching the videos and thinking like, wow, I wish we had that at our cafeterias here at the University of British Columbia. Maybe we will start to after next week. But I want to talk about hospitals. Hospitals are a place where you're supposed to go to get better. And I've spent a lot of time in hospitals and have been aghast at the food they often serve, which I think is completely detrimental to the patient's recovery. Can you speak to us about the food situation in hospitals and how do we start there to make things better?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I think it's a concern that many people share. And unfortunately, there tends to be a disconnect, I would say, in the general populace about the way that we eat and how what we eat has such an impact on our health. But I'm hopeful, and I think that that's starting to change. There's certainly a lot of work to be done, but we've had a lot of progress with some hospitals. In fact, one, Palomar Health System, which is in San Diego, it's a 4-unit hospital system. We started working with them a couple of years ago, and they did Meatless Monday. One of our wonderful volunteers had been doing an internship there and kept reaching out to them, and they got on board with doing Meatless Monday. And then they did a culinary training with us, and they saw how incredible the food could be. They started learning more about the benefits for environmental sustainability, for the health of their guests and their staff, who typically dine there more than the people who are just there for a day or two. And now they have just recently committed, in fact, around Earth Day of this year, to creating 60% plant-based entrees for their menu. So they want to have the majority of their entrees being plant-based eminently. And so that's just one example, but I'm seeing more hospitals that recognize that what they put on their patients' plates can have an impact on their patients' health. And we certainly intend to expand our work in that space and work with more such hospitals or more such institutions. But in terms of how we all start to make things better, you know, one of the things that I really appreciate about the work of the Humane Society is this gentle approach, just sort of assuming that people don't know, that they don't really understand the benefits and how easy it can be and that it can be profitable. So I think if your listeners or if you all are interested in starting to work with these institutions, it can start with a simple email reaching out and saying, did you know, and here are some great recipes and resources, and we'd be happy to help out in any way we can and connect you with people who would love to work with you.
Yeah, I think that the main problem is just like people, institutions such as universities and hospitals are so deep-seated in tradition, and that carries forward to the food they serve. So what do you see as the biggest challenge challenge towards changing this paradigm of offering the same old standard American diet type food in places like universities and hospitals, even though, as we've been talking about, there are so many compelling reasons to make change and to improve on food options for the people and ethical considerations. What is the psychology of change here on a greater scale to be aware about?
Well, I think that there are multiple things in that question that I'll address, but one of them is that, you know, our food is so tied up in so many things. So it's culture, it's part of our culture, it's part of our identity. And so it can be very difficult for us to want to make any kind of diet changes. And, you know, it's difficult to talk about religion. It's difficult to talk about politics. And we're told not to do that. But you start talking about somebody's food and food choices, and they get very defensive. So I'd have to add that to that category of things not to talk about. However, I think one way is by introducing people to delicious food. And, of course, that can be difficult if you have people who are very traditional and who are not really accustomed to experimenting with new things. But some of the hospitals, in fact, that we've worked with have found success by offering their patients and their guests international fare, much of which happens to be plant-based, without really putting that V word in front of it, because oftentimes that will scare people if they think, I'm not the kind of person who is a vegetarian or vegan, so I'm not going to choose the vegan option. Just serve chana masala, one of those dishes that just happens to be vegan and that anybody would enjoy. So I would say one is just introducing people to international fare or other foods that just happen to be vegan. But in terms of the psychology of change, making any kind of diet change can be very difficult. So in my book, you mentioned my book, Meat Less, Transform the Way You Eat and Live One Meal at a Time, I talk about the barriers to diet change and ways to overcome those barriers. And one of the things is really our community, that our communities often inform the way that we eat. And so if that's the case, then how about we get our communities on board with this? So make a Meatless Monday something that the entire hospital is encouraged to participate in. Do a pledge and give people perks for participating, or do a lunchtime meeting with your other colleagues who are participating in Meatless Monday. There are small things that we can do to not only add up to the success of the program itself, but also will have multiple benefits. So if we're all doing a Meatless Monday, that collective participation will mean big benefits for our health, for animals, and for the environment.
So I know a couple of years ago, we were so impressed. I know I was impressed to hear about the very first vegan dining hall in North America at the University of North Texas. I sure wish we had that here. Can you tell us about how that was born and how it is currently doing?
Sure. Well, we're so fortunate to have Ken Botts and Wanda White on our team now. They were the duo behind the vegan dining hall called Mean Greens at the University of North Texas. And that program actually came about because of guest demand. There were students who were interested in getting more vegan options. Some of them were vegetarian and vegan, and some of them were just interested in eating that way some of the time. And so they had five dining halls. One of them was underperforming, getting about 175 transactions per day, and the director decided he was either going to close it or try something different. So he decided, let's create a vegan dining hall. And so over the course of a summer, they transformed the space. So it had beautiful pictures of vegetables and inspirational quotes about vegetarian eating, but the menu was what was really exciting. They brought Wanda White in, who is a pastry chef by training, and she's got 30 years plus under her belt of institutional food service, and she's cooked in kitchens from Paris to Texas and everywhere in between. And she was not vegan, but she quickly learned how to cook vegan and ended up having the best desserts on campus, as you can imagine. People were coming in from all over the country and beyond to eat in this dining hall, and it went from 175 transactions to 500, and now it's over 1,000 transactions per day. And if you talk to the guests who are dining there, most of them are not vegetarian or vegan. They just go there because the food is delicious, because what they really focused on was vegan comfort food. But things like macaroni and cheese that is made with cashew cheese instead of with dairy milk, and they, you know, didn't talk about it as being vegan cashew cheese or vegan lasagna. It was just lasagna that happened to be plant-based. And so we're really fortunate they're now on our team and helping spread that message to institutions all across the United States and now beyond that.
Yeah, and it just sounds like a vegan heaven to me. I hope to see it here one day on my campus. So Jen has one final question for you.
Yeah, just for people listening who want to make the shifts themselves to a healthier, more compassionate food choices, can you talk about some personal strategies that people can take to get on that vegan path?
You bet. So I didn't go vegan 100% overnight. I became vegetarian and then later vegan. And I know some people who became vegan immediately and others who are still on the path and maybe just eating more meat-free meals. So I'd say there's not a one-size-fits-all. Find something that works for you and build on that. So a suggestion that I share in the book is pledging to do a meatless Monday and then adding Tuesday through Friday into your repertoire, and then hopefully you'll get 100% there. But don't beat yourself up. There's a gentleman who I talk about in the book who tried several times and kept falling off the wagon, and once he ate meat, he was like, oh, this is not for me. I can't stick with it. But it's about progress and not perfection. So make these choices in alignment with your values as often as you can, and then hopefully you'll get to the point where you ultimately want to be. And get your friends and family to join you, because not only will that help you be more successful, but it will multiply the benefits of this dietary decision that you're making. And it will have a huge impact on your own personal health, on the planet, as well as on those animals.
Okay, and I actually have one final question here, just for our listeners who may work in the food industry or at a hospital, or they're just concerned citizens about the food we're feeding to people in places like schools and hospital cafeterias. What would you suggest they do as a starting point if they want to make change in their community with regards to having these places offer healthy plant-based menus, and can they come to you for help?
Oh, I would love that. So first of all, email us at the Humane Society, and our email address is meatlessmonday@humanesociety.org. We have some wonderful toolkits on our website at humanesociety.org/mmtoolkit with information on how people can get involved. But as I mentioned before, I would start with just reaching out to them, letting them know that you're a guest or a customer of their institution and that you would like to see more such options, and then see what you can do to be helpful. It's about what I tell my team is patient persistence. So be patient, knowing that they have a lot of competing priorities, but be persistent and keep on reaching out until you get their attention. And then be very helpful and resourceful, because oftentimes these are very busy people. They've got a lot of competing interests. So we want to be as helpful as possible to ensure the success of these programs. But we have a whole team of people all across the United States as well as in Canada who would love to work with any of your listeners to help bring these programs to their institutions. So please reach out to us. We would love to work with you to create a successful program at your local institution.
Well, thank you, Christy, for speaking about your efforts on implementing and marketing plant-based menus in institutions such as hospital cafeterias and university dining halls. You can find out more about Christy's work at humanesociety.org/mmtoolkit, also forwardfood.org, and at christymiddleton.com. Also, be sure to check out her new book, which I'm almost finished reading. It's really good. It's an easy read. It's Meatless: Transform the Way You Eat and Live One Meal at a Time. Thank you, Christy, and I look forward to seeing you next week.
I can't wait. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
You're welcome. Take care.
Okay, have a great weekend. Bye-bye.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio, broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
And now for some news. Award-winning director and vegan environmentalist James Cameron executively produced a new vegan documentary called The Game Changers, set for release this year. The film is a collaboration between Cameron, director Luis C. Hoyos, who also directed Oscar-winning Japanese dolphin slaughter documentary The Cove, and mixed martial arts champion James Wilkes. The Game Changers will feature a wide array of elite athletes, special operations soldiers, scientists, cultural icons, and everyday heroes who are all thriving on a plant-based diet. The world's strongest man is a vegan. The world's fastest man, Carl Lewis, was the first to break the 10-second 100-meter sprint in 1991, and he did it when he was a vegan. We're trying to dispel the myth that you need protein from animals to become a real man, said James Cameron. In recent years, Cameron has become an avid advocate for veganism and appears alongside actor Samuel L. Jackson in Eating You Alive, a new documentary that focuses on the adverse health effects of consuming animal products.
I think this film itself is going to be a game changer.
Well, it helps to have big names behind films like this, right?
I actually found out about this yesterday. I thought, yeah, I want to have James Cameron on the show to tell us about this new film. So we can only hope. It's going to be fantastic. Yeah. It's going to be a game changer.
Absolutely. And the town of Taiji, Japan, is now asking the National Japan Fisheries Agency for new quotas for two more species of cetaceans. Currently, the seven species that Taiji town is allowed to kill, including other species of dolphins besides the popular bottlenose dolphin, shortfin pilot whales, and false killer whales. The total quota for Taiji for all these species combined was 1,820 animals during the six-month hunt that takes place annually. The hunters cannot fill their current quotas, and consumption of dolphin meat is in steep decline in Japan due to concerns about mercury poisoning, emphasized in educational work done by Earth Island's International Marine Mammal Project and other organizations. But Taiji is expected to use at least some of the new dolphins to expand their species available for captivity as they broker dolphins for aquariums around the world, particularly in Japan, China, Russia, and the Middle East, where new aquariums for marine mammals are being built. And if you want to know about the actual origin of the Vancouver Aquarium's dolphins, check out Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered documentary online.
And you know what? I actually just read an article within this last week saying that Mexico is growing very highly in its industry of taking in captive dolphins for people who come off the cruise ships who want to go swim with a dolphin.
It's growing. Trend,
it's terrible. It's actually growing. It's not declining in the world.
You would think compassion would be growing, but it's not. In other news, the animal rights group Direct Action Everywhere is currently holding its annual forum at their headquarters in Berkeley, California. And yesterday, hundreds of activists entered a Whole Foods store holding signs and the dead bodies of hens who passed inside farms that supplied Whole Foods. The group, commonly known by their acronym DXE, often performs open rescues on so-called humane farms, which sell to Whole Foods. The reason they target Whole Foods suppliers is because of the humane myth, which Whole Foods so heavily promotes. DXE investigators have posted many videos taken on these facilities, and the images of cruelty and neglect are shocking. And before going vegan, I was one of those Whole Foods shoppers. I used to pay more money for the bodies of animals that I thought were treated better before slaughter. I even thought they had separate slaughterhouses with more humane standards, and I now know that that just isn't true. So the only option is to go vegan if you want to cut out that cruelty. One person has been arrested and three others forcibly removed after entering Imperial Metals' annual conference at the Coquitlam Executive Plaza Hotel yesterday. At least a dozen RCMP officers were called to the scene after a group of protesters gathered outside the hotel and entered one of the conference rooms. Indigenous groups say they are protesting the event to draw attention to the cleanup of the Mount Polly tailings pond spill. The Mount Polly mine disaster is an environmental disaster in the Cariboo region of central BC that began in August 2014 with the breach of Imperial Metals own Mount Polly copper and gold mine tailings pond, releasing its water with years worth of mining waste into the Polly Lake. And so that's why the activists were there, is just encouraging them to take responsibility and clean that up and to probably make their money in better ways.
Okay, well, thank you so much for the news, Jen.
For our feature interview today, we have Lila Copeland on the show, who is a 15-year-old vegan activist from California who is changing the world. In 2011, she founded the Earth Peace Foundation. Its mission is to achieve peace between all species and to preserve the Earth's ecological soundness for future generations by revolutionizing into a plant-based society. And for the past 2 years, Lila has been campaigning in the LA school district to improve cafeteria menus with plant-based options. Just less than 3 weeks ago, she achieved this goal when the LAUSD decided to launch a plant-based pilot program within its schools. Lila is here today to tell us about the Earth Peace Foundation and her work in this ongoing campaign to offer healthy and compassionate options to hundreds of thousands of children. Hello, Lila. Welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Hello.
Hi. So I'm always so interested to learn about young activists such as yourself and to learn what drives them to make the world a better place. Now, you started your own group, the Earth Peace Foundation, when you were just 10 years old. And I know that you're vegan, too. So can you start by telling us about how you came to veganism and then why you started the Earth Peace Foundation? Now, I understand you've been an animal rights activist since you were 4 months old.
Yeah, ever since I was very young, I've been an animal rights activist. The first protest I ever went to was at Ringling Brothers Circus to try and protest the cruelty against elephants and tigers and other animals that are being forced to perform there.
And then what else have you been doing since then that has, I guess, nurtured your animal rights and veganism journey?
Well, after I went vegan, I started to go to further lengths starting Earth Peace Foundation, because which was concerned basically on the environment and the animals and spreading awareness about that. And also, I become more into protesting and being an activist. Like, I started going to SeaWorld protests and fur protests and other things like that.
And was there a point where you transitioned to veganism that you can actually remember what it is that actually got you to that point?
Well, I was around 10 when we finally went vegan. And I remember I was in the grocery store and my mom was just like, we're not going to buy eggs anymore. And that's really when the point when I went vegan. And I just remember that. And I remember learning about the cruelty that is caused by eggs and the male chicks getting put into the grinder. And I was just like, okay, I'm vegan. And I'm done. So that was it. From that, I started the Earth Peace Foundation, basically just because I was concerned and about the tremendous cruelty that happens to billions of animals every year, and also the environmental impact.
Wow, it's International Respect for Chickens Month this month, and we just actually did our last week's show all about chickens and definitely spoke about that issue with, you know, if you support the egg industry because you don't think animals get killed, well, think again, right? The fact that half of all chicks are put into grinders, it's just atrocious, and I wish more people would know that. I mean, you are way more educated as a young person, I think, than most people are, and I guess would you attribute that your mom helping you in this journey?
I actually think it really would, because her stopping buying eggs and raising me as a vegetarian is a lot of what caused me to go vegan.
Yeah, I think that's great. So, and thanks to your mom for raising you in this way. We also featured mothers and children on our Mother's Day show a few weeks ago, and mothers who have raised their children as young activists. It's so inspiring, I think, when people raise their children to have a moral and ethical conscience with regards to how we treat animals and how we treat our environment. You're also very environmentally focused as well and health focused. I really appreciate that. So in 2015, you launched the Healthy Freedom Campaign. Can you tell us about your reasons behind why such a campaign was needed in the LA school district? What were you seeing, or what do you still see in the cafeterias at school?
Well, as an LAUSD student, when I go to school and I see kids eating their lunch, the kids who eat the cafeteria food, I see how unhealthy and gross the food that they eat is, and I know how unhealthy it is and how it causes disease. And I really do think that it's unfair that kids have no choice but to have this every day at lunch. And that's pretty much the reason I started this campaign, because kids deserve freedom of choice. And it would really help kids lead a healthy life and spread awareness if they had that option.
Do you see that your fellow students, like that you have peers who want to become vegan or vegetarian, but because they're young, they just don't know how to get that support, especially if their parents won't let them, and especially also if they're getting their meals from school where there are no options?
Yeah, I've seen that a lot. A lot of kids are very unaware. Like one time when I was at a taste testing for my campaign a while back, there was this girl who asked if you could buy a veggie burger in a grocery store. And I was just like really confused, because I thought that would have been obvious. But there are a lot of kids that don't know and don't think they have access to this kind of food.
So I want to know, you know, the Healthy Freedom Campaign, it was a really and is still a really large project. So what were the steps and the strategy that you had to follow in order to achieve what you wanted to, which was to, I guess, for school district administrators to recognize that healthy plant-based options have a place in the school cafeterias and that there's a need to act on this? What was your strategy in the campaign to make that happen?
Well, it started with just meeting with the board members, and from that, I realized it was going to be a really big campaign. I mean, from that first step, there were some challenges, because those people are just so committed to consuming meat and dairy, and getting through to them and talking about benefits of plant-based meals is really hard. But we just have to take every hurdle we have and just get over it, and that helps us move to a next level and get to where we want to be, hopefully, which we're hoping for.
Well, I know you did at least a couple of speeches in front of the school administrators, and I was watching them yesterday. They're very inspiring. And you spoke about some issues with regards to meat and dairy's impact on the earth and on our health. Can you maybe just give us a synopsis on some of the points that you did bring up with them to make your case?
Yeah, well, that was at the two events we've had so far are the kickoff, like a lot more than a year ago, and this past meeting for the pilot. And there I made two speeches in total. One was for the kickoff, and I pretty much was just explaining the impact meat has. Well, I care most about food and health, so I was talking about that most, and all the studies that came out from the World Health Organization that say meat causes cancer. And also reports from Harvard University that say red meat causes heart disease. And also another one from the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine about dairy and how it causes bone loss. So I added those points in my speeches to try to get through to the board members. And I touched on the environment a little as well, but I focused on the main aspect to them, which is the health.
So the board, they voted unanimously to start this pilot program in LA schools. And I'm wondering if you can tell us about what the program will entail. It is a pilot program. And I know that you're asking to offer plant-based entrees and plant milks.
Well, this pilot has just been passed by them, but it really hasn't been started yet. And we don't really know what it's going to entail yet, sadly. There's a lot of work that still has to be done. Still have to decide about the menu and all of those aspects. And, yeah, they're saying it would start within 90 days, but we really don't know because they haven't even tested anything or done anything to get the pilot started. So we are really concerned because we're being faced with some opposition from the administrators, and trying to get through that challenges and getting through these challenges is going to be hard for us, but we're hoping for the best with this pilot, and we're happy it passed.
Yeah. So it's great that it's passed. It's unfortunate that there's still some pushback. I'm wondering if you can talk about these challenges that you've faced throughout the campaign. Like, what are the naysayers saying? Like, what do they have to oppose launching such a program?
Well, all in all, like, the LAUSD community is very, like, attached to meat and dairy, and trying to get through to them about going plant-based is very hard because, well, they don't really understand plant-based or the vegan message at all because they're so used to their way, which is consuming meat and dairy.
Well, I think you and the people that have supported your campaign, you've done what you can so far. I guess you still have to try to get through to people, right? It's not just the LA community, trust me. It's the whole world that's just, you know, stuck on their meat-centered diet. So I'm wondering, all in all, like the LAUSD, that's the school district in Los Angeles, how many children are in all of those schools? So I'm just wondering what the potential for this program would have in the future. Like, how many children could this impact?
Well, there are 1,100 schools and 600,000 students in all of LAUSD. So if we end up being successful with this campaign and get vegan meals in all of LAUSD, I mean, we're thinking of going on to the state level after that, but it could have a huge impact on the students in LA. And it would really mean a lot spreading awareness about not only the health aspect, but also the animals and the planet.
Absolutely. So I know you had a lot of different supporters come to help with the campaign. Can you tell us about a few of the different people who did support and speak up for the campaign? I know I saw actress Pamela Anderson do a speech online. Dr. Neil Bernard was just there recently. And one of your heroes and my heroes as well, Fiona Oakes, was able to come from England. Can you tell us a little bit about them and what they had to say to support you?
Yeah, so when I started, I asked like 100 people to help me out, and I kept on getting no over and over again. So when Pamela Anderson and these people agreed to help me out, it meant so much to me and the success of this campaign as well. And I want to thank Pamela Anderson for coming out and supporting me. It means so much. And also, there were so many others, like these people flew out from where they live so far away on their own dime. Like, I want to thank Dr. Clapper, who's an amazing vegan.
He's
an amazing vegan physician, as well as Tori Washington, who's an all-vegan bodybuilder and athlete. and also Dr. Barnard, who just came out, and so many others. And of course, Fiona, she's a world record breaking marathon runner. And she's one of my mentors, and she's just such a sweet and amazing person. And having her come out all the way from England was so amazing, and it meant so much. And it really made a big impact in getting this pilot passed.
Lila, I understand that Kip Anderson, who directed Cowspiracy, the film, had a role also in this campaign. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, he helped us by donating many copies, actually 20 of his copies of his film, to give to the board members who are deciding on our campaign. And he has been a really avid supporter of us, and I'm really grateful for that, and thank you to him.
Wow, I hope they all watch the film, because that film talks about the environmental impacts of the meat industry, and I've heard of it getting so many people to go vegan, but at least we would hope that they would become educated on the issues, right? Because there's no way that you can look backwards once you watch that film. That's great. It's great to know. So I'm wondering, like, what do you attribute the success of the campaign towards? Would it be the support from these high-profile people? Would it be that there's so many inspiring kids such as yourself that were speaking up as to what they wanted? What do you think it is that made the campaign successful?
Well, getting the pilot passed, I think it was all of us, the students, the people that came. But this campaign really hasn't been successful because we still have so much work to do, and it'll probably take years and years to get what we want, which is to get vegan meals in front of all kids statewide, what we're focusing on. And I see this going on all the way through my college and maybe even nationwide if we really are successful.
So what advice would you have for other young people who may be inspired by what you've been doing and who might also want to pursue a similar type of campaign in their own area from wherever they're listening from across the world?
I'd say get ready to sacrifice, I guess, a lot of your personal time. And if you really want to get into something like this, really, you have to have a lot of passion and you have to put a lot of that into what you do. And be ready to never give up, because a lot of times you'll get told no, but you just have to refuse that, and you have to stand up for what you believe in. And I really think that's important, and to always stay true to yourself and put passion into your heart.
I think that's wonderful. Now, you spoke a bit before about how there's still opposition in the LA area. And I said, like, it's everywhere, right? Like, I guess there's still a lot of work to be done for young people and adults to become aware of the environmental health and compassion issues, and then to actually want to do something about them in institutions such as schools, especially public schools. So I guess my question is like, in your mind, like, how do you think we can get there? Like, what needs to be done? Do we just need to keep trying to educate people, and one day we hope they'll get it?
Well, I think education is really important, as well as just spreading awareness. And I think having these meals like in school could really help spread the word among our youth in LA and beyond, and to spread the vegan message about the health and the animals and the planet, as well just kids and activists. Spreading the message, even out of this campaign, really means a lot, and it's making an impact. Maybe not that much, but it adds up something for sure.
So finally, I want to know, what drives you to make a difference in the world for people, the animals, and the planet? You're only 15, but you're doing so much already. Why do you do this?
Well, beyond everything, I think when it comes down to it, the main reason that I'm doing all this is for the animals. And they're my main concern, because they're the ones who are going through so much pain. And I mean, that's the reason that I'm doing all this, beyond all the other things like the environment and the health. I think they're the main reason I'm doing this. And I'm just so passionate for helping them. And I can't stand to see them suffer. And that's the reason I'm doing all this, to try to liberate them.
Is there anything our listeners can do to help support this ongoing campaign?
Yeah, they can go to our Facebook page at Earth Peace Foundation. And there should be a link to donate to help our campaign, top of the page. And we are a 501c3 organization, so they can easily donate to us.
Yeah, and that means that if you're living in the States, you can get a tax-deductible receipt for that. So that's great. I didn't even know that. Thank you, Lila, for coming on the show today to tell us about the ongoing success of that you will now see the Los Angeles School District launching a plant-based pilot in their schools. To find out more about Lila's work, you can find Earth Peace Foundation on Facebook, Instagram, and at earthpeacefoundation.org. Thank you so much, Lila, for joining us today. And I wish you success in the future.
Okay, thank you so much. It was so nice talking to you.
And so while we were listening to that interview, Allison was doing the draw, and we have some winners.
Yeah, so we have, well, I'm going to do the draw now.
Let's talk about
ready.
What the draw is for.
The draw is for, it's two sets of 2-for-1 tickets. That means that you pay half price. So you just pay. So bring a friend and you only pay $7.50 each for Veg Expo this weekend. Jen will be there. I will be there. And lots of people will be there. So some people entered. Here's the first person. Heather Doherty, you're our first winner. And the second winner is Nadine Coffin. Congratulations. So I will message you both on Facebook and send you the coupon codes and see you there. And say hi to Jen at Mercy for Animals.
And Nadine's a friend of mine.
Cool. Nadine. Awesome.
But we did not rig the draw. I'm in another room.
Nope. Nope.
So you've been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM, CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us on our next show next Friday, June 2nd. We'll be presenting a show for World Oceans Day, including how sound affects animals, and offer some insights into the fishing industry. Allison will also be discussing the Forward Food Summit in Vancouver that she'll be attending.
Yeah, really looking forward to that next week.
And we here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Animalvoices.org is where you can stream shows or download the shows as podcasts, read our show blog with detailed links, and subscribe via iTunes. Stay in touch with us via our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. You can also send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. To end the show today, we're playing a song, Be Healthy by Dead Prez, and stay tuned for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith after that. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
It's all love, it's all love, all love. No sweets, only ripe vegetables, fresh fruit and whole wheat. I'm from the old school, my household smell like soul food, bruh. Curry falafel, barbecue tofu, no fish though, no candy bars, no cigarettes, only ganja, fresh squeezed juice from oranges. Exercising daily to stay healthy, and I rarely drink water out the tap cause it's filthy.
Lentil soup is mental fruit, and ginger root is good for the youths. Fresh vegetable with them Italian stew. Sweet yam fries with the green hallelujah. Careful how you season and prepare your foods, cause you don't wanna lose vitamins and minerals, and that's the jewel. Life brings life, it's valuable. So I eat what comes from the ground, it's natural. Let your food be your medicine, no accelerant. Strictly herb generates from the sun, cause I got melanin and drink water. 8 glasses a day, cause that's what they say.
They say you are what you eat, so I strive to eat healthy. My goal in life is not to be rich or wealthy, cause true wealth comes from good health and wise ways. We gotta start taking better care of ourselves. They say you are what you eat, so I strive to eat healthy. My goal in life is not to be rich or wealthy, cause true wealth comes from good health and wise ways. We gotta start taking better care of ourselves. Be healthy, y'all.